Iran starts testing its domestically made coronavirus vaccine on human beings while facing difficulties in importing vaccines due to U.S. sanctions. Moscow expands a list of German officials who are barred from entering Russia in response to EU sanctions over alleged cyber attacks on German parliament. And a strong earthquake hit central Croatia, causing injuries and widespread damage southeast of the capital, Zagreb. Good to have you with us. Well, good news. Iran has kicked off the human trial of a domestically developed coronavirus vaccine, and this while the country is facing difficulties in importing foreign vaccines as a result of U.S. sanctions. Yusuf Jalali has a report.
This is the first ever Iranian-made coronavirus vaccine that has made its way to human trials. It's called Coviran. Produced by Iranian biotech firm Shifa Farm, the vaccine was tested on three volunteers during a ceremony attended by Iran's health officials.
Today is a very promising day for all Iranians. Today we reap the strenuous efforts of our experts and researchers who work tirelessly to produce this vaccine. We are already setting up the needed infrastructure for the mass production of this vaccine to kick off its production at a large scale as soon as it clears all of the human trials.
Some 60,000 people signed up to get the jab after a call for volunteers issued by the health ministry. Out of this number, 56 people were confirmed for the first stage of the human trials. The approved volunteers will receive two shots within 2 weeks. The results will be announced roughly a month after the second shot. The first person who received the vaccine was the daughter of this man, who was in charge of the project to develop a local vaccine. He says this was meant to prove to all Iranians that the local vaccine is safe.
I want to send this message that I care about the health of my people the same way as I care about my children. The second message is that I, as a leader of this project, I'm 100% certain about the effectiveness and the safety of this vaccine.
Iran is working on seven other local vaccines, each using a different technology for immunization against the virus. But none has so far cleared animal trials. Coviran uses a coronavirus that is weakened or killed by chemicals, similar to how polio immunizations work. Leading Western vaccines like Pfizer use newer, less proven technologies to target the coronavirus's spike protein using RNA. Iranian experts say their vaccine has an edge over its rivals. Coviran does not need to be kept in ultra-low temperatures, an issue that Pfizer is grappling with.
This vaccine, they don't need any special refrigeration. In a normal refrigerator, we can do it. And you know that our primary health care in Iran is very, very good. And maybe a lot of other countries, they don't have our primary health care. In primary health care, we are able to vaccinate very soon most of the people.
Coviran will be tested on at least 10,000 volunteers before getting the approval of the health ministry to hit the market. Health officials expect that the process will take a few months. Until then, Iranian authorities need to import foreign-made vaccines to inoculate their citizens. But U.S. sanctions are a barrier. The embargoes do not directly target Iran's medical industry. But due to banking restrictions, the country cannot transfer money to any international medical firm which would sell its products to Iran.
Experts here say their concerns about the sanctions have acted as a catalyst that helped catapult them to the human trial phase ahead of the set deadline. Now as the Iranian vaccine is inching closer to the market, hopes are revived that Iranians will no longer have to worry about the American barriers that block their access to foreign vaccines. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The number of confirmed coronavirus infections in Germany has risen by 13,000 to almost 1.7 million as fears are mounting about a more infectious variant of the disease. According to the Robert Koch Institute for Infectious Diseases, the death toll from the virus also rose by 852 to edge closer to 31,000. German media has reported that the new corona variant found in Britain seems to have been present in Germany since November. Several other European countries, including France, Spain, Sweden, have already detected the first cases of the mutated strain. Elsewhere on the continent, Russia registered 27,000 new COVID-19 cases, taking the total to more than 3.1 million. Officials also talked about 562 deaths in one day, and that pushes the death toll in that country closer to 56,000. Leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement, Saeed Hassan Nasrallah, says that Saudi Arabia is handing gloves with the United States and Israel in the assassination of the Iranian commander, Lieutenant General Soleimani, in Iraq. Mariam Saleh reports from Beirut.
In an extensive interview, Hezbollah Secretary General Saeed Hassan Nasrallah revealed that the criminal assassination of Iran's top commander, General Hash Qasem Soleimani, was not only an American crime, but that Israel and Saudi Arabia were culprits in this crime as well, even if their role was just to provoke Washington to commit it. The Hezbollah leader considered that it is not the responsibility only of one state or country to retaliate for that crime, but any free individual who feels that they have fidelity to those martyrs.
Trump was the main figure, but any person who took this decision or gave the order or executed the order, they all must be punished. Now it is only a matter of time. 1 month, 2 months, 1 year or 2 years, 7 years, 10 years. What the entire world needs to know is the criminals will not go unpunished. Sooner or later, they will be punished. Every single free person in this nation feels they have a responsibility in punishing the culprits.
Saeed Nasrallah stressed that the decision to free the region of U.S. military presence has been taken. The leader of Lebanon's resistance spoke about the personality of General Soleimani and how he played a key role in the fight against the U.S. occupation and the fight against Takfiri terrorists.
Hash Qasem Soleimani had an instrumental role in the Arab East, especially with regards to the struggle with Israel and with the American occupation of Iraq and the American presence in the region. So it was expected that he would be targeted by the Americans. But targeting Hash Soleimani was by itself a desperate move with no horizon from the part of the Americans.
Experts believe that the cause of defeating imperialist projects continues, regardless of the loss of one major leader as an individual.
I believe that with institutions like the Revolutionary Guards, the Quds Brigade, or Hezbollah, continuity is always in the minds of the leadership who is aware of the fact that it's always targeted by the enemies.
The commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Revolutionary Guards Corps was assassinated along with his companions in a U.S. airstrike near Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. Hezbollah Secretary General Saeed Hassan Nasrallah said that the crime of assassinating Hash Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis was orchestrated by the U.S., Israel, and Saudi Arabia, stressing that the killers will be punished. Experts believe the role of Saudi Arabia in funding assassinations goes way back in history, a role which goes against any leader who faces U.S.-Israeli agendas. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
The first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of top commander Soleimani is around the corner. Gaza correspondent Ashraf Shannon has talked to a number of senior Palestinian officials about the U.S. targeted killing of the anti-terror icon.
On the anniversary of the martyrdom of the great commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, we say that he loved Palestine and Palestine has loved him. He struggled for Jerusalem al-Quds and God willing al-Quds loves him. Soleimani was assassinated because of what he represents to the Palestinian resistance and his support to the Palestinian resistance. By his assassination, the resistance in general was targeted. We salute and pay tribute to this great martyr, and we salute and express our appreciation for the Islamic Republic of Iran, which continues to support the Palestinian people. We say to the United States administration and the Israeli regime that the assassination of the great General Soleimani will not stop the path of resistance and will not stop Iran from supporting the resistance on Palestine. On this way, we stress that the spirit of Soleimani remains among the resistance fighters because he has his footsteps among the resistance fighters. He loved and supported Palestine, and his heart and mind were with the Palestine and Jerusalem al-Quds.
Martyr Soleimani, who was a backbone for Palestinian resistance, is now an icon to all resistance fighters. The memory and the legacy of Marta Soleimani will be eternal in the hearts and minds of Palestinians and will pave the way for the liberation of Palestine. Freedom fighters have died for the sake of Palestine, but Marta Soleimani was the most prominent among them.
Iran's anti-terrorism icon was assassinated by the United States military in the Iraqi capital Baghdad on January the 3rd. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was the highest-ranking commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Soleimani played a key role in strengthening resistance movements across the region. The commander took part in different battlefields to lead resistance fighters. A quiet, charismatic man, a strategic genius, and a tactical operator who spent most of his life in combat. Soleimani first set foot on a battlefield in the 1980s, when the newly founded Islamic Republic of Iran came under attack by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. Soleimani was at the time a young man in his 20s, fighting tirelessly to defend Iranian soil against the aggressor. After 8 years of war, Soleimani emerged battle-tested and battle-hardened. He became a national hero and a beloved commander in the IRGC. Soleimani and the forces under his command soon became one of the instrumental players in combating terrorism in Iran's southeastern areas and in Afghanistan. But the most important chapter of his military career started when he became the chief commander of the IRGC's Quds Force in 1998. General Soleimani strongly supported the Palestinian cause. He spared no effort to strengthen the Hezbollah resistance movement in Lebanon. During the 33-day war between Israel and Lebanese resistance fighters in 2006, General Soleimani went to Lebanon to oversee the battle against the Israeli regime. The fight against the Daesh terrorist group probably marked the climax of his anti-terror endeavors. During the tough campaign against Daesh, he was often seen in battlefields in Iraq and Syria. General Soleimani was the brain behind key operations that paralyzed the monster terror group and rolled back its advances. Soleimani has long been a household name in Iran and many regional countries. His presence in the battle against terrorism gave people a sense of security. It is no doubt tough for them to deal with his loss. People in Iraq and Iran are still mourning the loss of their anti-terror icon. Soleimani's funeral processions have become a symbol of unity. Following the US assassination, regional resistance groups pledged to remain steadfast on his path. The general is no longer among us, but his martyrdom seems to have given fresh blood to the resistance front.
December 30th, or the ninth day of the Mansaf Day in Persian calendar, is special to people in Iran. On that day, big demonstrations were held across the nation to put an end to the unrest that erupted after the 2009 presidential election. Human Ali reports.
December 30th every year, which coincides with the ninth day of month day in Iranian calendar, is the reminder of the epic turnout of the Iranian nation to foil enemies' plots. On the anniversary of this occasion, Press TV went to a mosque where some people set fire to during the unrests. We talked to the imam of this mosque about the events.
There were two groups of protesters then. Many of them were the people protesting against the result of the polls. But the second group were some opportunists who came here and threw Molotov cocktails from two sides and set fire to the mosque and the Holy Quran manuscripts.
11 years ago, millions of people in capital Tehran and several major other cities took to the streets to condemn the unrest following the 2009 presidential election.
The mosque was also hosting some officials who talked about the heroic presence of people that slammed the sedition, as the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, put it.
Day 9th, in my opinion, is a day of Iranian nation. On this day, millions of people took to the street 30 years after the Islamic Revolution to show allegiance to their country and leader.
The unrest was started by two of the presidential candidates who had lost the election, claiming that there has been vote rigging. Iranians used to commemorate the heroic demonstration of Day 9th every year, but this year, due to the coronavirus pandemic, the ceremony is held limited by observing health protocols. Human Abedi, Tehran.
Moscow has barred one more German official from entering the country in response to EU sanctions over alleged Russian cyber attacks on German parliament in 2015. The Russian Foreign Ministry says that Moscow's decision is in response to, quote, destructive EU sanctions in October. It described the EU allegations that Russia was involved in the hacking as a pretext. The Foreign Ministry did not specify which German officials are added to the list, but said that they are senior intelligence and defense ministry officials. Moscow is at odds with Berlin over a number of issues, including the alleged poisoning of Russian opposition figure Alexei Navalny in August. Last week, the Kremlin also slapped sanctions on several EU officials after the bloc imposed an entry ban on several Russian officials over the Navalny case. A magnitude 6.4 earthquake has hit central Croatia, reportedly causing injuries and considerable damage southeast of the capital, Zagreb. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, the quake hit at a depth of 10 kilometers, with the epicenter being the town of Petrinja. It was strongly felt in Zagreb and its surrounding areas, where panicked residents ran into the streets. There have been no immediate reports of casualties, but emergency services have been quoted as saying many people were injured and many more got rescued from the rubble. The same area was hit by a magnitude 5.2 quake on Monday, causing damage to buildings. The UK says its post-Brexit trade deal with the EU is good for the fishing industry that would allow the sector to rebuild itself during a 5.5-year transition period. A senior member of the British negotiating team said that the agreement recognizes the UK's sovereignty over its fishing waters. The official says that Britain has already invested $135 million into programs to help modernize the fish processing industry. London and Brussels finalized the deal on Thursday, following months of marathon negotiations. Fisheries groups have since criticized the agreement, saying the industry had been sacrificed in the post-Brexit trade talks. The deal also drew reactions from a number of French officials, some of them saying it has left the French fishermen facing uncertainties. The Russian top diplomat says that the military cooperation between his country and Turkey will not be deterred by U.S. sanctions. Sergei Lavrov made an announcement following talks with his Turkish counterpart, Mevlut Çavuşoğlu, in Moscow. He said President Vladimir Putin has hailed Turkey's determination to continue the defense cooperation despite, quote, illegitimate pressure from Washington. Earlier this month, the U.S. imposed long-anticipated sanctions on its NATO ally over its procurement and testing of the Russian-made air defense system. Turkey condemned the decision as an act on its sovereign rights. Last year, Washington also removed Ankara from its F-35 fighter jet program over buying S-400 missiles. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
President Donald Trump on Sunday, 27th of December, abruptly signed a measure providing $900 billion in pandemic aid and funding the government through to September, ending last-minute turmoil he himself had created over legislation that will offer an economic lifeline to millions of Americans and avert a government shutdown. The article you're about to hear has been written by New York Times journalists Emily Cochrane, Nelson Schwartz, and Gillian Friedman. The piece is titled Trump Signs Pandemic Relief Bill After Unemployment Aid Lapses. President Donald Trump on Sunday abruptly signed a measure providing $900 billion in pandemic aid and funding the government through to September, ending last-minute turmoil that he himself had created over legislation that will offer an economic lifeline to millions of Americans and avert a government shutdown. The legislative package will provide billions of dollars for the distribution of vaccines, funds for schools, small businesses, hospitals, and American families, and money needed to keep the government open for the remainder of the fiscal year. The enactment came less than 48 hours before the government would have shut down, and just days before the eviction moratorium and other critical pandemic relief provisions were set to expire. But it also came after two critical unemployment programs lapsed, guaranteeing a delay in benefits for millions of unemployed Americans. The crisis was one of Donald Trump's own making, after he blindsided lawmakers and White House officials with a videotaped implicit threat on Tuesday to veto the package, which his top deputies had helped negotiate and which had cleared both chambers of Congress with overwhelming bipartisan support nearly a week ago. The 5,593-page legislation was flown to Florida, where the president is spending the winter holidays on Thursday, and had been waiting for Donald Trump's signature ever since. Having been largely on the sidelines during months-long negotiations, the president suddenly threatened to withhold his signature with an unexpected demand to more than triple the $600 direct payments to $2,000, and with criticism over some government funding provisions that provided foreign aid. But Republicans had insisted on curtailing the size of the direct payments to accommodate conservative concerns about the size of the package, and the provisions Donald Trump singled out were in line with the president's budget request this year. Even as he acquiesced to bipartisan pleas to sign the legislation, Donald Trump issued a series of demands for congressional action, though lawmakers showed little enthusiasm to embrace them with just 6 days left in the session. "I will sign the omnibus and COVID package with a strong message that makes clear to Congress that wasteful items need to be removed, Donald Trump said in a statement late on Sunday, saying he would send a formal request asking for some of the funds to be removed. But the 25-day time frame for considering such a request will collide with the inauguration of President-elect Joseph R. Biden Jr. on 20th of January, and House Democrats have already said they do not plan to vote on the request. The House Appropriations Committee has jurisdiction over rescissions, and our Democratic majority will reject any rescissions submitted by President Trump, said Representative Nita Lowey of New York, the chairwoman of the House Appropriations Committee. By turning the page on this request, we will allow the Biden-Harris administration to begin to build back better. Donald Trump claimed in his statement that the Senate would start the process for a vote on legislation that would increase direct payments and address a provision that would repeal a legal shield for social media companies that he has tried to force into a sweeping military policy bill. The president, who has been consumed with false claims of voter fraud since his election loss, also claimed that Congress would take up the issue, a certain non-starter for Democrats who control the House of Representatives. House Democrats plan on Monday to vote on legislation that would provide for $2,000 direct payments, with Speaker Nancy Pelosi saying Mr. Trump should immediately call on congressional Republicans to end their obstruction and support the measure. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, the minority leader, said he would move to pass the bill in the Senate, but such a maneuver would require Republican support. But during the negotiations, Senate Republicans have resisted increasing the payments, citing concerns about the deficit. In a statement applauding the president's signature, Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the majority leader, made no mention of the $2,000 payments or any of the president's assertions about the next steps for the chamber he controls. I applaud President Trump's decision to get hundreds of billions of dollars of crucial COVID-19 relief out the door and into the hands of American families as quickly as possible, Mitch McConnell said, without any mention of the delay that Donald Trump had caused. Whilst the legislation provides for expanded and extended unemployment benefits, Donald Trump's delay in signing allowed two critical programs to lapse this weekend and guarantees a delay in benefits for millions of Americans who had relied on the income. The legislation provides for a weekly $300 federal benefit, about half the original benefit established in the March stimulus package, for 11 weeks and extends the two programs. With state unemployment agencies waiting for federal guidance on how to put the new legislation in place, it is unclear how quickly those programs could resume and whether the benefits would be retroactive to accommodate the delay. Because unemployment benefits are processed weekly and the legislation was not signed before the beginning of the week, it is likely that workers in most states will lose a week of benefits under the expanded program, as well as a week with the $300 supplemental benefit. They might get it at the back end, but there are bills tomorrow, said Michelle Evermore, a senior policy analyst for the National Employment Law Project and nonprofit workers' rights group. It's just so frustrating that he couldn't have figured this out yesterday. One day of delay is catastrophe for millions of Americans. A Democratic aide on Sunday said most states would need guidance from the Labor Department to see if they could pay benefits for the week of 27th of December. The delay also jeopardized the time frame for distributing the $600 direct payments to most American adults, which Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, had initially promised could be distributed as early as this week. For families wondering how they will pay January rent or buy groceries, a weeks-long delay could have serious consequences, Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, the top Democrat on the Senate Finance Committee, said in a statement on Sunday evening. Senator Ron Wyden said, while it's a huge relief that the bill is being signed, Donald Trump's tantrum has created unnecessary hardship and stress for millions of American families. Donald Trump's signing of the measure came as welcome relief for desperate Americans who had been left on the edge as their unemployment benefits lapsed. Melissa Martinez, a 52-year-old of Westminster, Colorado, said she had applied for more than 50 jobs since being laid off as an operations manager for a transportation company back in April. Like millions of others, her unemployment benefits expired the day after Christmas. I'll be able to pay my bills. I'm not going to have to sacrifice my credit. I'm not going to have to worry about where we're going to live, she said. It's a huge weight lifted off my shoulders, a huge weight. Though she is grateful for the aid, Ms. Martinez wishes that President Trump would have signed the bill sooner. It's a huge deal because we needed it and we were desperate for it, she said. But we shouldn't have been desperate for a $600 check after 9 months. This is something that should have been done months ago.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we're going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise their children Islamically. The main source is the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah compiled by Ayatollah Ray Shahri. And we have in our studio guest speaker, Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qum. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the program, Sister Salma.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for being here. So we have been talking in the past few sessions about the common mistakes parents make when upbringing their children. And in the previous episode, we talked about how parents cause their children to have negative behaviors. And we talked about that the parent expects too many things from the child, or maybe because the parents are not in the right state of mind, they end up, you know, acting differently with the child, and the child, you know, ends up getting this negative behavior because of the negative surrounding. And you talked mainly about how we have to make our home a place of positivity so that the child can, you know, benefit.
That's right. I would like to mention another mistake, a common mistake that parents usually make, and that is hypocrisy, that is lack of honesty. The home is a place where all the things are known to the child, you know, the reality of it, like how the parent behaves. And then he takes it from the parent's, you know, attitude. He takes lessons, wrong or right lessons, from the parent's attitude. So many parents do not realize how observant a child is. And he absorbs also. He sees and he absorbs as well.
Yeah.
So they'll talk in front of him, forgetting that he's a child is present.
Yeah.
Almost as though he's like a piece of furniture or something like that. Deaf and dumb. But a child listens and he also absorbs. And he ponders over. And then he repeats also.
It's true.
Right?
I think so, we used to say, you know, little ears are hearing or little eyes are seeing. Because they're very much, you know.
Yeah, the walls even have ears. So when a parent says something about a particular thing or a person, and then say something different to someone else, he learns to be also two-faced indirectly. And two-facedness means what? Lack of honesty.
Yeah.
And that's a very, very important element in training a child, to be honest. Because when you're honest with yourself, then you can be honest with others, and you can also be honest with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yeah.
Right? So honesty is a very, very important element in for the foundation of the Islamic knowledge
and
Islamic practice of
definitely gets ruined if they see their parents not honest.
And that's hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is like behaving so well outside and inside, you know, lashing out whatever they can. It usually happens with the extended members of the family. Sometimes, you know, when something happens, the parents probably speak ill about a very close member like the uncle or the aunts, and the children even take this.
Yeah,
and they feel even bad about it because they love their parents. They feel why this injustice was done, even if there was an injustice. And then they even believe that it's okay to say things at home and outside be different. In fact, outside you have to be different.
Yeah, you have to be very good to them as if nothing has happened. And they feel like, you know.
And that's like a really... making yourself low in front of Allah, I feel. You have to be so honest. Wherever he is, he's watching you, right?
Or at least in this scenario, you know, when, for example, if the parent is talking bad about one of the aunts or uncles, I guess they should explain the child that now that we're going out, even if we're not in good terms with the aunt, we should at least be talking properly with them because it's a good thing to do. But like, at least we should explain it because it's not like they should go now and be rude to those people.
But there's a little bit of hypocrisy there too, right?
Yeah, it's true.
So we have to admit that.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so we're just going to take a short break, and inshallah we will be back for more on this topic just after the break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome, dear audience, to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing. So you were talking about mistakes that parents do when upbringing their children, and one of the mistakes that you have mentioned is hypocrisy. So you were talking about that.
Yeah, I was identifying when this happens and how to deal with it, but I didn't go into detail. And that's when, for example, two people have some disagreements.
Yeah.
Now they want to let out at home, but they know that they can't disagree outside. So that, you know, like they give a wrong message to the child in turn. The child thinks that, you know, it's okay to disagree at home and to lash out and to speak ill, but outside you should behave your best.
Yeah.
Now, we can look at it in two ways. For example, to have good akhlaq and manners is of utmost importance. The way you say that, you know, if parents explain to their children that although, you know, all these things were done, disagreements happen, the outside you should be your best. That's like expecting good akhlaq, right? In return for bad akhlaq. That's a good thing. But when you've done the damage, it wouldn't take you a long way. For example, what's the damage that we did here? Gossiping. Saying all the things that we can. Sometimes we say facts, but even facts, according to Islam, is ghibat in itself. It's talking ill of a person.
Yeah.
So what we can do is maybe we can try to be silent, or if it was witnessed by the children, try to like push it away.
Yeah, and try to maybe talk good about the aunt that, no, look, she's in fact such a good person, but this small mistake happened.
Yeah, people make mistakes, yeah. Right? And then the child will learn that, no, this is like something very honest.
Yeah.
Outside, the same as inside. And then outside, you know, sometimes we have disagreements that are very heavy, but outside we are so sweet and pretentious. That should also not be there.
Yeah.
So it should be a firm tone of salam, for example, and dua, talking a little if necessary. Then showing to the child that it's not as if, you know, like if I'm disappointed with her, I have to be over sweet to her.
Mm.
It's good to show good akhlaq. And good akhlaq does not pertain that you exaggerate somebody and you try to, you know, make somebody feel that they have done the right thing. No. That feeling that if they had done the wrong thing is good to be felt.
Yeah.
That, you know, what you did was wrong, but I'm putting it aside because of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And that's a very, very, virtuous thing to do.
Definitely.
To teach the child in such a manner could reap beautiful results in the end.
Yeah,
the child would also learn how to tackle with the problem in
exactly.
turn,
yeah,
know, and not be two-faced.
I think because the child gets confused then, you know, they feel like, okay, I don't understand. Should we be good or should we be bad
yeah.
now? We talked badly, why is my mom being good? Or maybe at times the mother will be good, at times the mother will be bad. There should be this kind of a one-way reaction, like a reaction that will usually be the same way. So the child doesn't get confused that, okay, you can be good or you can be bad. No,
that's
this
right.
is the way my mother is. If this is what happens inside, it's going to be like this outside.
Yeah.
He should be ready for the outcomes. Otherwise, he'll never have a strong, you know, like a balanced kind of thing.
The balanced kind of character, right?
All right, so we're going to take a short break. And after the break, we're going to continue this discussion. Please stay tuned.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, No father has granted a gift to his child better than good manners.
Okay, so you're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. The show is Islamic Upbringing with Sister Salma Khalfan. So, Sister Salma, you were telling us about the mistakes that parents do, and one of them, which is unfortunately common, is hypocrisy, because they sometimes are, you know, when they tend to gossip about people, and the child is confused about this nature because the parent is one way at home and another way outside, so it's confusing for the child.
Yeah, and there's a hadith on this regard from Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, who says, the worst of the servants of Allah is one who has two faces and two tongues.
Mm-hmm.
We know that two faces and two tongues is not possible. So the Imam explains that what does it mean by having two faces and two tongues? He praises his brother in faith when he is present, and eats him when he's absent, eats his flesh, right? So that's ghibat, and that brings hypocrisy. So hypocrisy is not something that only when, you know, something major happens, you're being a hypocrite. No, it happens at home, in minor things. For example, a mother would even tell the children about the father, and then behave properly when the father comes, maybe forgetting it, or, you know, like, and that really makes a child very disillusioned.
Yeah.
Because he sees everything good in the parents. The parents give him, provide for him, take care of him, love him, are at home for him.
The role models.
Yeah, they take care for the children in every hardship. So the child really kind of worships them in that way, you know. That they are the lords.
Yeah.
The children's lords, for when they don't understand that there is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala who takes care of everything, they think their parents are the ones who are the providers of everything.
And they are the perfect. So
when they are very disillusioned to see these two kind of two behaviors.
Yeah.
And then they also wrongly adapt that kind of behavior, unfortunately. So inshallah, we stay free from this kind of hypocrisy in every little detail also.
Inshallah.
And we don't make these kind of mistakes for the future of our children. Then there's another mistake that sometimes usually parents, the common mistake that they make is making a child feel bad in front of others, humiliating him in front of others. You know, a child even is born like a different entity, a creation of Allah who has his own personality. We don't say that this is my child. No, this is Allah's creature.
Mm.
That's amazing. This is the amanat of Allah. And they are in our hands for the time being, so that we can do the best for them and bring them up in the best way. So they have their own personalities, just like an adult has their own personality. They want even love. They also want respect. So he feels very, you know, like ashamed in public when he's scolded and he's put down.
It really, you know, reduces his self-moral esteem. He's like, so many things get ruined in this process.
Even if he's a small child, sometimes children, you know, parents say, look, this child is so well-behaved, look at you.
Yeah.
And that small thing makes him so upset, but we can't get inside the feelings of the children, can we? We are told to really understand their feelings, but we can't get inside their feelings. It's only Allah who knows the actual feeling of a child, how he's hurt. And Islam tells us never to do that. So it knows that this is the best for the child. And what you do is ruin the child's self-respect.
Yeah, and you know, I think another reason why they do it so often, parents do these mistakes so often, is because a child's nature is very forgiving and very forgetting. Like, they're forgetful. Meaning, we feel they've forgotten the matter completely. But in reality, it's there. And it's, in fact, going to build up the more you continue these kind of things. So the child looks like he's forgiven and he's gone and he's playing and he's, you know, forgotten everything. The reality is still there. So this is, I think, one of the things that parents don't realize.
Yeah. They don't realize, especially in small things. For example, if a child has made mistake, he shouldn't be scolded around other people. Mm-hmm. The best thing is to, you know, like call him or tell him in his ear that, don't you think this is the wrong thing to do here?
Yeah.
Explain him a little, especially if the child understands a little, they will come around to it. And many parents have experienced that. Instead of scolding him in front of everyone, sometimes, you know, out of anger, just retorting back that, don't do this. This is wrong. it will lower his personality in front of everyone, because he has that self-respect also in his own way, yeah, or her own way at that tender age also.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us today. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. So, dear audience, thank you for joining us on the program. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, parstoday.com. Inshallah, until the next program, bi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on October 12, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with the participants at the joint graduation ceremony held at the Imam Ali Military Academy.
The last point that I wish to raise is again about the coronavirus. In all my speeches, I feel obliged to bring up this matter. First of all, I wish to thank once again the officials in the area of health and treatment, including our dear nurses, dear physicians, and other officials in charge. In the third wave, which is really dangerous, the number of infected cases and the victims is really painful when one looks at it. Therefore, we should thank these people because they are really sacrificing themselves and working hard. What I want to say today is that regulations should become obligatory and imposed by the government. Of course, I have been saying this to the honorable officials, to the honorable president, and to others since a long time ago. I said to them that regulations should become obligatory. In certain cases, some activities should be canceled and some trips should be declared forbidden. As you witnessed, our dear pious and religious people accepted the decision to cancel the Arba'een pilgrimage.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
When we ask them not to cross the borders, they accepted it. This is very important. On the issue of mourning occasions, the National Anti-Corona Headquarters imposed certain regulations, and our pious and committed people carefully observed the regulations. This should be accelerated in various areas, and it should become compulsory and obligatory. Some trips should be prevented. Sometimes certain trips cause the disease to be spread in a fast and uncontrollable manner, which is a source of deep regret. Therefore, everyone should exercise caution both in words and in action so that we can get rid of this disease, God willing, and so that the nation can feel at ease about the grave calamity that exists today. I entrust all of you to God, and I pray for all of you. I hope that Allah the Exalted will increase His blessings on all you, on officials, on the dear youth, on students, and on graduates on a daily basis, God willing. Greetings be upon you, and Allah's mercy and blessings.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.